going to go back to throw the ball. Sets up, looks, throws toward the corner of the end zone, and he's intercepted! Intercepted! The knocks down the ball! Head of the 35, the 40, Kenny Wade's here to score!
Thomas already got a crease. There he goes, and there he goes. He's off. 94 yards on the opening run. Touchdown.
Play fake, Harrison goes hard right down the field for the home run. Got Parker. He's in a foot race. They won't catch him. Touchdown, Ducks.
Welcome to another episode of the Duck Pod. I'm Ryan Thorburn, joined by Austin Meek, and we're getting ready for Oregon's road trip to Utah. The Utes are number 11 in the country and still have quite a bit to play for. Another really good defense, and so we have a great guest for you this week, Kurt Kragthorpe, the longtime columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune, is joining us. Kurt, how are you doing?
Great. Nice to be with you guys.
So, Kurt, I noticed you wrote this week about, you know, maybe a path to the Rose Bowl for the Utes, which would, you know, obviously be historic for them as a new member of the Pac-12. I know they beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl and have won some Fiesta Bowls, but what would that mean to them, you know, assuming they don't get into the playoff mix, to go to the Rose Bowl and win a Pac-12 championship?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to kind of compare those three things. Kind of each would be a landmark in itself, but there's just something mythical about the Rose Bowl, particularly in this part of the country, and to think that 10 years ago that the idea of Utah playing in the Rose Bowl would have been the farthest thing from anyone's mind, and so here we are with that as a possibility. So I think even a two-loss Utah team playing in the Rose Bowl would definitely rival those previous achievements.
Kurt, I want to go back to the game last year at Autzen Stadium between Oregon and Utah. You know, from Oregon's perspective, I think that game was really the first time that it slapped you in the face that, boy, this is not the same Oregon team that it's been. Oregon just got dismantled by Utah at home in that game. And I think it was kind of a precursor to what we've seen with the Ducks in the year since then. From Utah's perspective, what did that game do, you know, in terms of establishing Utah as a team that could be a contender in the Pac-12? I mean, Utah had had, you know, some breakthrough moments before that, but how important was that win at Autzen Stadium for Utah last season?
You know, at the time, it was shocking, probably just as much to Utah fans as to Oregon fans. And what it did in the short term is it got the Utes to number 3 in the country in the AP poll a couple of weeks later. Now, having said that, the fact that Utah lost convincingly at USC and then dropped a couple of more games along the way, I think some of the value of that game was lost as the season went on. But in a kind of a bigger picture, to circle back to your question, I think what it did was convinced that the Utes that they could play with anybody in the conference. I remember coming when Utah came into the league, we were all talking about how lucky they were that they didn't have to play Stanford and Oregon the first 2 years in the schedule rotation, because Oregon was this, again, I use the word mythical, opponent that was untouchable, and that proved true the first time the Utes went up to Autzen in 2013. And so I just think in a larger sense, it did show the Utes that no one's unbeatable in the league. But again, they kind of didn't follow through on that win last year, and so it kind of got forgotten in that sense, and it's only being brought up again now that the Ducks are coming to town this week.
I've always kind of been a fan. I don't have to cover him, but from a distance, of Kyle Whittingham. He's just a guy who pretty much wins, you know, 10 to 12 games every year, and there's just a lot of consistency there. You know, even when they moved from the Mountain West, which they dominated at the end of their run there, into the Pac-12, it's not like they fell off the map or anything. They had some adjustments, but how good a coach is this guy, and do you see him as a Utah lifer? Because obviously Oregon may be looking at candidates around the country, and he would seem to be a top 10 coach in my book.
Yeah, it's really been interesting to follow his career, and I've literally known him for 45 years, and so it's been fascinating to kind of see how it's evolved with him as the head coach at Utah, having taken over for Urban Meyer. And I've thought a lot about that, as Utah is positioned to possibly win the championship this year and or go to the Rose Bowl. And a couple of things strike me. One is that I think we all thought that Utah would have a little easier transition into the Pac-12 because they had lined up and played successfully against teams like Oregon, for example, in the Urban Meyer era and in the first few years of Whittingham. But that proved to be tougher than we might have thought initially. But conversely, like you say, now you look at it, and I'm just going to tally up some numbers this week, but there's a good chance that Utah has won more Pac-12 games than anybody in the last 3 years. And you, the other thing that comes to mind is that when Jim Mora, Rich Rodriguez, and Todd Graham took their jobs, it kind of looked like, okay, those programs were through kidding around now, and they're going to stay ahead of Utah. But the Utes, again, if you use the word consistency, they've been very steady while those three programs are now just fighting for bowl eligibility this season. So Whittingham's consistency and getting the Utes to get to the level where they are and stay where they are these last 3 years really has been impressive. And in terms of being a Utah lifer, I think we would all be stunned if he ever left. He's had a couple opportunities at various checkpoints, and there was kind of a period a couple of years ago when he did kind of have a breakthrough season and kind of feuded with his athletic director a little bit, and there was some speculation that he might leave at that time. But since he didn't leave then, and he's gotten two new contracts since then, it all looks pretty stable as he approaches his 57th birthday next week.
I wanted to ask you about Joe Williams, because this strikes me as just one of the great stories in college football this season. The guy, if I understand it, basically retires from football, and then Utah had a bunch of injuries at running back. So he comes back on the team, and I was at that game at Oregon State, his first game back, where he ran for 179 yards and had 330-some the next week against UCLA, and has been over 170 every game and is probably going to get there against Oregon if Oregon's run defense is any indication. So for people who aren't familiar with this story, give us the background on Joe Williams and the kind of weird path he's taken this year.
Yeah, weird is a good word for it, for sure. I'll start with last season when Devontae Booker, who's now starting for the Denver Broncos, got hurt in about week 9 or 10, and so Joe Williams had to take over the job, having not hardly played at all because Booker was so durable and dependable. But Williams looked really good in those last three games. He rushed for 194 yards against Colorado, for example. So coming into this season, everybody thought he would pick up from that point and really have a huge year. But in the first two games against Southern Utah and BYU, he ran for a total of 75 yards, fumbled in each of those games, got chewed out visibly by Whittingham on the sidelines in each of those games. And so he clearly was not the same player from last year. So he stepped away, and I think the consensus around here is, well, the Utes aren't losing much because this guy just didn't have it in those first two games. And then, as you mentioned, it's almost like the Texas A&M 12th man story, that he was literally watching the game against California from the seats at Rice-Eccles Stadium. Now, he didn't come down to the sideline like the Aggie legend, but they did convince him the following Tuesday to come back to practice because they were so thin on running backs. And then, as you say, the first game was at Oregon State, and that was kind of interesting because I know my reaction being at that game was, well, he did pretty well, but it's just the Beavers. And the other part of that was he really wore down in the second half. He had something like 40 yards in the second half after having about 140 in the first half. But then came the game at the Rose Bowl against UCLA where he ran for 332 and just obliterated the school single-game rushing record. And he's been really productive ever since. And as much as he didn't look like the same guy as last year in the first two games, that's how much he doesn't look like the same guy now that he wasn't in those first two games, if that makes sense. So it is just a remarkable transformation. It's not just the retirement part and coming back. It's just the whole idea that he is a totally different running back now.
Well, speaking of Cal, Utah lost to Cal, who had a goal line stand. And when you look at the national defensive rankings, Oregon and Cal are pretty much fighting it out for the bottom. What happened in that game, and does that give Oregon any kind of hope for their struggling defense against Utah, or has Utah figured some things out on offense, do you think?
Well, again, the Joel Williams factor is huge. I mean, he's the way he's playing now, he's like twice as good as anybody Utah was giving the ball to in that game at Cal, even though they were decent running backs. And it's one of those weird games that I think Utah was so determined to control the ball against Cal that they almost didn't worry about how they finished the drives. Obviously, they're trying to score touchdowns, but they kept the ball for 42 minutes and yet only scored 23 points. They had a couple of fourth down failures even earlier than the infamous last sequence on the goal line. So I think that that Utah learned from that game that they need to keep the offense a little more diverse, even when they're having a reasonable amount of running success. And so I think that what you'll find is if the Ducks are just totally committed to trying to stop the run, that Troy Williams can do enough to exploit them through the air and then loosen them back up a little bit.
Well, Kurt, I want to ask you to peer into your crystal ball here a little bit with this race in the Pac-12 South. So Utah has Oregon on Saturday, and then they go to Colorado in what's going to be one of the biggest games in the Pac-12 this season. USC also in the mix to win the South. How do you see this division shaking out? Who do you think is going to be the team that ultimately plays for the Pac-12 title from the South?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Utah, not as a homer pick necessarily, but I just find myself in that camp of people who will believe fully in Colorado only when I look up on January 2nd and they're playing in the Rose Bowl. I've got them losing at home to Washington State this week, in fact, and so I totally admire what Mike McIntyre has done with that team, but I just can't totally convince myself to believe in them yet. So I've got Utah beating Oregon and Colorado and getting to that championship game, and then regardless of whether it's Washington in a rematch or Whittingham's friend Mike Leach, another BYU graduate, although he didn't play football there, going against each other for the championship, either would be a pretty interesting matchup.
All right, Kurt. Well, we really appreciate your time, and are you going to be at the game on Saturday? Nice
deadline. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Well, we'll see you there, and look forward to going to Salt Lake City.
Okay, nice talking to you guys.